Welcome back to season two, episode one of The Junction.
Yeah, here we go.
Did you miss it?
Actually, I really did. I was looking at our podcast page on the Apple app, and it was like, no episodes since December. I was like, why haven't we been on the...
Did you chew through it? Did you actually listen to our episodes after they would release?
I'd listened to some of them. I really struggle to hear my own voice, and that just bothers me. So I've listened to some of them, but I had my fourth child, and that was a whirlwind. And yeah, so I've just been, missing talking about a lot of these cool things.
I was disappointed that you didn't finish your Chase GPT bot that, like, we still, we could still ask questions of while you were out.
Oh, totally. And
get us closer to figuring out how we automate paternity leave or something.
It's funny you mentioned that, because we're actually building now. Did I tell you this? Somebody listened to one of our podcast episodes where we talked about, like, an HR bot, emailed in. Now we're building it for them.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Which is super awesome. And, we kind of approached it as, well, we don't know what you don't know, and you don't know what we don't know, so we're going to make it up. And it's actually really cool. So we're figuring out what that looks like. We're adding in some additional, one-off things, but we might end up productizing it.
You know what we don't have to automate on that one? The lead source.
Mm.
I know where it came from.
The podcast.
Let's not fight over that one. That's awesome. I am very jazzed to hear that it's still moving along. There's been, going back to listening to old episodes, I think what makes me like cringe the most if I let too much time go by and don't on these episodes, which I'm all caught up, but it's the so much has changed and so much of what I know has changed, but it doesn't matter because it's still changing all the time anyways. So there is a lot of really cool stuff happening. I think that I'm just glad we're back on our cadence. So to all of our listeners who still tuned in and asked us when our next episode was coming, we're back. Thanks for joining us.
We're back. And we committed to recording every week, but we didn't set a number of episodes, right? So season two, might be like, 10, 12? I don't know.
TBD.
We'll TBD it. But we really like the idea of having seasons.
I'm working on this like being flex thing, It's hard when you're like type A.
Oh.
And you like to organize and plan out your life.
You mean you like set up a whole like talk track for this episode and you're not just winging it like me?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So Sam, right, was out for a hot minute. I think we talked about
hot
it.
Minute.
It was all over the news. Now he's on the board. I think that came out just a few days ago.
Well, and they've just kind of stabilized. Like they've got their leadership more in position, because when that happened, there was some drama going on with the CTO, I think, and there was a lot of stuff shaken out. There were emails from Elon Musk that I saw, some of which were redacted, but there was definitely a lot of noise circling.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's when you have that amount of money in a industry that is literally exploding. I've been watching the Nvidia stock just go straight up. Right. Like people are going to have real hot takes, in that kind of industry. And, this was a little bit lesser known, wasn't as widely talked about, but Sam went and talked to some people about like $7 trillion investment, something like that. And he was trying to get
a lot of zeros,
a whole lot of money. Right. And I think ultimately, there's a lot more in store here that we haven't seen yet.
He promises in a tweet, he says it'll be worth the wait.
If Benioff said, hey, it's going to be worth the wait. Man, I'm still waiting from 2016 when you talked about the customer 360. We might be waiting for a long time.
You went way back.
Yeah. Well, we really are kind of still waiting for some of those things that they promised.
Was the first and last time you went to Dreamforce? Or did you go again?
Actually, that's really funny you say that, because I think it was the first and last time that I went to Dreamforce. When I met Scott, I don't think I went back. But that was also
You won't go back until you get those features.
They better deliver. I'm gonna text Sam real quick. Tell him.
2016. I mean, it's 2024.
I know.
8 years removed.
Yeah, I think it literally was 2016.
Well, fortunately for us, Sam Altman and all these godfathers of AI are moving a whole lot quicker than what it would seem
were
waiting for on Salesforce. So it will be interesting to see how things shake out. They've got, you know, board members from reputable companies, former Gates Foundation, ex-Sony exec, Instacart CEO, star-studded.
Yeah, I think they definitely have maybe better people than they did before. Kicking out, you know, like the main guy, and then everybody else, you know, was about to leave too. It's probably not the best move, but I think there was probably some things we don't know about that were going on.
Well, here's the deal. We can talk about OpenAI all day long, but we know who my favorite large language model is right now.
Is it Meta's, what is it? What do they have? I forget. Google's Gemini. You're a Gemini fan, aren't you?
Nope.
Is it? You know,
starts with a C and ends with a
Clippy from Microsoft Word.
Oh my gosh. I would love to know how many listeners that recall Clippy.
Yeah. I bet you they bring back Clippy. It's going to be like Clippy GPT and it's going to be in your online OneDrive Word doc.
Pure nostalgia. Take me back.
A little bounce again.
Everybody's heard about how I'd go back to the days of a landline and a heartbeat. But then I also like these tools, so I'm kind of torn.
You can have your landline, and I will hang out with Claude, and we'll see how far we get.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that show on Apple TV, Severance?
I have it downloaded. I don't think I've watched it yet.
Are you familiar with the concept?
Like you get canned and you get money?
No. So you go, you give up your... outside, your knowledge of your outside self. It's called your outie. And then the innie is the one that works all day long. And it basically severs
your memories. Oh, I have
seen this. Yeah.
I've had a kid or a few maybe I've seen it, but now I remember it.
So I feel like sometimes when I think about my life and how I come to work and I'm like in this insane, fast-moving technology environment where we're just like, give me a tool. Let me adopt that AI. Yeah. And like, we're preaching all this stuff. And then when I go home, I'm like, no TV. I want my garden and some chickens and like a landline. And I don't really want anyone to be able to access me until I come back.
I'm pretty sure this morning you said something about making rice for 10 years straight. And that was the only thing that you were going to do.
Well, no, that was in the context of making sushi, and some of most renowned sushi restaurants, some of the people start out, they make
rice
for 10 years.
For 10 years.
You can get really good. Think about one skill that you have, and if you did 10 years of effort, I mean, we're still young. We can have so many skills in our lifetime still. If you dedicate 10 years to it, you think about how good.
Yeah, but it's like one thing. You know, like,
I mean, you can do it in parallel to other things. Like I can be really good at the sushi rice being a co-host on a podcast and baking sourdough bread.
I guess. I don't know. The way you described it, it was like they make rice every day.
That is their job.
For 10 years and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, don't wash dishes. Just come in, grab the rice, make it sticky, you know?
I mean, where I'm going with this is there a world in which we can have... I enjoy having access to these tools, but then I also enjoy the freedom from, or like, I still have this weird separation, or call it a severance, of like my work life has components of AI intertwined into the things that I do every day.
Mm.
And I have not yet, even though I've downloaded ChatGPT on my phone, and I really wish Claude, that's who we're talking about here. I wish they had an app. Maybe they have in the most recent release and I haven't looked at it yet, but that's where it hasn't quite landed for me. I haven't brought AI into my personal life. Like yesterday and the day before, so I learned how to make, me and my husband made homemade sushi, okay?
Yeah.
What did I do? I didn't go on ChatGPT and ask ChatGPT how to make the best homemade sushi in the world or how to make the best sushi rice. What did I do? old school Mel went on YouTube and I Googled it and I was like, what's the difference between this rice vinegar and this rice vinegar? And I didn't even think to ask. Not once in 48 hours did I think I should ask Claude, my fave, or ChatGPT. Like, I literally didn't even do it. There's this weird crossover. I'm curious, if you're a listener and you use AI and automation in your work and you don't use it in your personal life, let me know so I don't feel so alone. There's like, because you have totally intertwined, like,
yeah,
it's overlapped into your.
I think I've almost taken it to maybe a new level, like not in a weird way, but in like a, it's just natural now because of how quick it is to answer something with pretty good accuracy, right? Like I rebuilt my fence in January while I was spending some time home with the kids. And I couldn't remember the standard size of the board that goes across the horizontally, not your vertical boards, right? And I was like, well, I could Google this and spend 30 minutes trying to figure this out in the middle of Home Depot.
Hunt and peck. Yeah.
Or I could just spin up a voice chat with GPT and ask, hey, what is the standardized size for this board? And it was so awesome. It was like, you need to do it. But great, now I'm done, right? Yeah. And it's almost like you have an expert in every space. That's okay, right? You got to deal with the hallucinations, but you can just ask it, hey, I've got this problem. Give me a quick answer. Yeah. Like Rachel and I were hating on the Teflon pans, and we asked it, which is better? Just hot take, what's your take on stainless steel versus Teflon? And it like ran down all these different things, right? And within seconds, I knew that I wouldn't like a stainless steel pan because my bacon's going to stick.
Why are you cooking your bacon in a pan, first of all?
Because I get up.
Oven. The oven.
Yeah, but the oven takes 20 minutes. I'm trying to move quick. Make
but
breakfast
it cooks
every day.
More evenly.
Oh, my gosh.
Otherwise, it gets like, okay, well, we shouldn't have brought it up. Bacon enthusiast over here.
Claude, what's the best way to make bacon? I'm asking you right
it's
now.
It's in the oven.
What's the best
375
way to make bacon?
20 to 25 minutes. Drain off your grease. Save it for later so you can cook with it.
Mm-hmm.
Makes for great, okay. A great cooking fat for your green beans or your chicken.
Yeah.
Telling you.
Okay. It says, use the right pan, cast iron skillet. So that tells
cast
me
iron,
not
that,
oven.
That's my first thing why I was confused by your prompt, you and Rachel. So do you only have stainless steel and Teflon? You don't have any cast iron pans?
We do have cast iron pans. I also hate those because the bacon sticks.
You need to season it.
All the foodies out there are going to come after me.
Yeah. You need to type in there, how do I season my cast iron pans?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Claude because I just subscribed literally over the weekend because of the way that it answers things compared to ChatGPT. The thing that I'm struggling with now is that it's like so confident in what it tells you. Like even when you ask, let me back up. I was trying to do some infrastructure as code stuff on Azure, playing around, you know, just figuring it out. Just with some extra time that I had. And I asked it to it's called a YAML file, right? So write some code for me, essentially. And it was so positive that it was right. I was like, I don't think that's actually right. And it reconfirmed itself, its own code. And then I went and Googled it and it was wrong, you know, and it's like a hallucination compounded by the fact that it's hallucinating its own confidence.
But you can tell it, you don't like it, its answer.
Yeah, well.
You can thumbs down and.
Well, where I was going with that was when you ask it questions that you are not fully, that you either don't fully understand all the concepts, right? Or you're just taking it, you know, as the way that it describes it, you're going to find yourself in trouble because the first time I did it, I ran with it. You know, I'm just playing around. No problems. And I spent 3 hours debugging something that it told me was right. And I was like, yeah, got to worry about those hallucinations. So I think there's still, and that was in Claude, and ChatGPT almost did the same exact thing because I was kind of playing in both. But I don't know how they're going to get around that because it's just so confident in what it tells you. And I mean, like making bacon, sure, like not that that's a very challenging topic, but it could get to the point where it's too confident. And well, that doesn't, I mean, cooking bacon, right? I guess unless you burn it, it really, you're not going to know the difference, right? But with...
Oh, I do. With I know the difference.
Your face. With code, it either works or it doesn't.
We'll do it at the office sometime.
Okay. We're going to have a bacon cook-off competition.
Yeah. I'm here for that. No, I mean, it's a really good point. I think when I don't come from the, yes, you want it to be right. For me, I'm using it more of an idea generator than a fact validator or, you know, so I'm probably like not as tuned into like, is that factually correct? A lot of the questions I ask Claude are very, like just to kind of get my gears going or to fill in some gaps. Hey, I've got this job description. I want the, this job to include these types of tasks. What am I not thinking of? Here's some of my expectations of someone in this role. Do I have the right credentials listed based on seniority or like things like that, where it could say, frankly, when I do this now with Claude, it's very suggestive. It really hasn't come back and said, you really need to do this or you really need to do that, the way that I've been utilizing it. So I think for me, I've enjoyed the usability. I really like the way that it talks to me. I don't know if that's like, you know, there is something that I've experienced. It's just different. And they just released, I don't know if anyone else out there using Claude 3, they just released this prompt library, which I'm still kind of wrapping my head around some of these prompts. Like there are some that you would recognize, like a career coach, a mindfulness mentor, you know, like things that you could go, I could kind of see how I would use that. A dream interpreter. Ooh, I didn't see that one. I'll have to test that one out. But then there's a couple other ones where I'm just like, I don't even know what that means. So like philosophical musings. Is that what you do? Like a tweet tone detector. Like you pop in a tweet and then it's set and it kind of reads the sentiment of the tone. Alien anthropologist. Mm. What does that prompt? You know, are these basically personas that they've created and they're trying to make it easier for people to transition into this comfortable place where we're all using apps in our daily lives? I mean, forget work. Some of this stuff is literally, what is it? I mean, there's just a few. Oh, culinary creator. See?
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Well, I don't need that. I already.
You're already a pro.
Yeah. But like, I don't know. I just look at this and kind of go, is this a way to make it safer, more appealing, accessible to somebody that is still trying to understand how AI can enhance their life?
Yeah. I think this is just scratching the surface. It's basically like giving somebody a prompt. I think about like fake it till you make it or, you know, those things like, well, I'm going to start this job being a therapist. Well, don't do that. Don't be a therapist, right? But like a cash register teller, right? You don't know literally what to do until you get trained. Well, then somebody tells you, well, here's the button you need to press, right? It almost kind of feels like that, like where it maybe might be okay. I wouldn't count it as an expert. But I think some people are starting to take it kind of to the next level where they're analyzing data and then doing like kind of automatically doing something else because of that. I'm thinking about this tweet that you pulled up where he was looking for polishing business emails, right, off of what he was doing with ChatGPT-4. Like it's the playground that you're describing feels more of like a chat bot, like let's chat back and forth. Right. And there's another version where it's like, hey, go do this thing and spit back the output. I think where we're headed is that the latter of those two, and then pair that up with the next automation or the next input and output and the next thing, and then you get your response. There's an example in the ChatGPT documentation that talks about somebody asking for the weather in, I don't know, Cincinnati. I forget what the actual town is. But ChatGPT doesn't know what the weather is, right? So give it access to these functions that then can it can run and go get more data, right? And I don't know if there's like levels of this stuff, but I think that's where we're headed. The chatbot is more of a, I don't know, like an interactive kind of thing. And I think where we're headed is something that's less interactive. Actually, I'm thinking about back to our buddy who was talking about things being in the loop, right? Or there's still a human in the loop. In my mind, the loop just keeps getting bigger, though, until the human comes back in, right? I think in those conversations, it was like, we'll go do a couple of things and then let me check it, right? I think we're going to get to the point where it's going to do a whole lot of things and then you're going to check it. And that loop will just keep getting bigger and bigger. I don't know if, like you mentioned, I don't think we'll maybe ever step out of that. And if we do, we have some different problems to talk about.
Well, it will be interesting to see how it changes our respective areas. Sam Altman did, he was quoted saying that AI will handle 95% of marketing work done by agencies and creatives.
Mm.
You know, I screenshotted that and sent that in the marketing channel here, Ben. Just waiting for someone to go, what? Hot take. I do think it's interesting. He's talking about the agencies that marketers use, strategists, creative professionals that could be outsourcing your content or your design. Maybe it's video, something else. There's so many services, right? We, on a different podcast, on an offshoot in the thick of it by our founder and CEO, he interviews other founders, and he recently interviewed the owner of a design agency, a marketing agency. And his take was, we're adopting it and we're learning how to use it. And we want to know how we can continue to steward our clients, which is exactly what, you know, I think anyone in any industry needs to do. Is it's kind of like make, you know, that one person in the room that you don't understand, or that one, you want to get to know them and maybe be their best friend. Like, help me understand what it is that you do so that I can figure out how we can work together better. Mm-hmm. Or if you're going to take on some of my existing responsibilities, then how does that change my role? And when I read something like 95% of marketing work done, that's hard for me to, I think about my responsibilities and how much of that gets outsourced. And to your point about the loop, there's a lot of me still, I think, needing to be in that loop. And so it's more of managing those models and figuring out the data sources and what's feeding them and how that we're feeding the market insights back into those models. And so I don't know. Interesting. I don't know what your take is on that.
I think things will start to blur quite a bit. You know, maybe most, maybe not, I'll say most, some folks are worried that it's going to take their entire job. Some folks are like, no, this will never be anything. I think it's certainly somewhere in the middle where a lot of those things start, pieces of the loop, right, get pulled in, and it, now it's an AI thing, right?
It's maybe for some companies, depending on what the task is, the adoption of the technology far outweighs. It's like a minimal cost compared to kind of the hard labor cost, but there are other occupations that require full-blown, like you think of like the restaurant industry, like the robotics to replace people in the industry. It's astronomical. I mean, think about, and not every restaurant is owned by a restaurant group that has, you know, the same level of investment or funding. So, I mean, there are definitely industries that come to my mind that are like American Airlines. Scott and I talked about this on the last episode. You know, they recently outsourced their, or are working on outsourcing a large majority of their call center to AI technology.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, pilots and sure, self-driving airplanes and things like that, but like pilots and flight attendants and all the other staff that make things work, like, I still don't see a very immediate, like, we're not talking 3 months, we're going to be interacting with like robotic flight attendants. It could be somewhere off in the future, but is that really a priority? Like,
yeah, somebody, maybe it was Sam, I don't know who said this, but somebody said we're now in like the AI era, and not, this was before Taylor Swift's kind of thing, right? But we're now in the stage of humanity being in this artificial intelligence piece. What I've noticed just tracking all the events or recounting all the things, even in the last 20 minutes, right, is that it's a progression, and it, not that it's inequality, that's a whole different topic, but people are going to be able to do things faster, cheaper, better because of X, right? Maybe it's because of Claude or because of this thing, right? And what we've seen in the past is sort of, at least in America, in terms of like companies consolidating, right? We're going to see, I think it was Sam that said this, that we're going to see the first $1 billion company run by one person. I forget where that showed up, but that was really intriguing. So from this weekend, right, I was trying to do infrastructure as a code, just playing around with it. I mean, it's not going to be my day job. But what was really interesting was like, man, this is really complicated stuff, right? And I could Google forever. Maybe I could get on Upwork and pay somebody, you know, I'm sure really good money, right, to teach me. Or I could just use Claude to get me like just one step, right? And then I ran into some bugs that I solved, and then I got to the next step. Well, by the end of it, I actually ended up deploying something on Azure, and I didn't need to go to Upwork, right? Like, sure, there's probably, I mean, all the security people are like freaking out right now, but.
Well, that's kind of like a perfect segue. I don't know if you were trying to tee this up into one of our other headlines that we pulled up for today.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about paying someone who's an expert in their field, call it a consultant, or in what I'm about to talk about, a tutor. So there was this recent article about an AI math tutor boosting performance in Ghana. And it's basically this, I think it came out of kind of really rose out of the ashes of COVID-19. But there's this app called Rory. It's a free AI-powered math tutor available on WhatsApp. That basically is helping, you know, students in Ghana like figure out, like they're achieving higher math scores, right, compared to regular math lessons. And part of it is accessibility. Maybe a lot of the students, especially as this article is kind of referencing, maybe aren't in proximity to a school, but also, I mean, how many of them have access to like a tutor, you know? So there's this in-depth paper that kind of breaks it all down. But they basically, Oxford researchers from Oxford divided 1,000 students into two groups, one that was using Rory and the other ones that weren't. And after 8 months, the Rory students had significantly higher math scores than the control group. And so that's just one of those things that it's another great story of how it's making, knowledge accessible to people that wouldn't otherwise have it. So if you didn't have the alternative of, I guess you could have Googled it and tried to piece it together. But what I heard you say was, I really would rather trust, like, if I didn't have these tools, I'd have to like hire someone to tell me, right? Or hire someone to build it. What these tools are doing is it's giving you that assistant or that tutor.
It's like open source knowledge almost, right? Like it's no longer locked behind people that have spent years doing it. Not that that's wrong. But when you do that, now you expedite a whole lot of things, right? The progression of technology, the progression of this, right? Students learning faster because they have 24/7 access.
And now what does that mean for those local economies? Can students now enter the workforce that wouldn't have otherwise been skilled or had the education to do it? Right? Like there's a real economic impact there, for better or for worse, depending on the type of tool and the knowledge we're equipping people with.
It's not Minority Report. There was a movie where like all the very wealthy people lived on in a space station and had like this medical thing. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm asking Claude. Oh.
it was like a giant ring and there's a medical like bed that you could lay in and it could solve any problem. And everybody on Earth, right, was dying. I forget. But it reminded me of like, they are working with robots. And I don't know if this is actually in there, but the idea behind the movie, or at least in my thought in my head, is that one day we're going to be trained by robots and the robots are going to be like, no, you have to do it this way. and it might be
that might be good for some factions of society.
It might be hallucinating, right? And it's still wrong. And you're just imagining like trying to beat up a robot.
How is that different from what happens in the world today? I think those are called cults. I don't know. You're not wrong. I mean, it's at the end of the day, like there's going to be humans are flawed. There's going to be flaws in the technology, and we have to find a balance.
Oh, totally. Looking at this this study that you had, though, was really interesting because they're accessing it with a phone, right? And I'm scrolling through the study.
On WhatsApp.
Yeah, on WhatsApp. And I'm just curious, like, there's some screenshots in here with, you know, math questions. What is the line segment OP, the radius, center, chord, or diameter? And I think it's talking about the radius. Anyway, I'm just curious, like, how they set all of this up so that you could, it's almost like there's a program behind the deal, right, that is informing you of what to do. It reminds me of actually the... maybe this was in the thick of it, one of the podcasts where the AI would set up a workout regimen for you, right? And you were supposed to do like, well, I've only got 30 minutes, so rebuild my deal, right?
Right.
Like there's some kind of underlying program here, but this is super awesome. What's really interesting though is, something that I don't know how we're going to tackle. Like in my head, I can visualize, here's how we solve this problem, or here's the direction this would go. I don't know how we're going to solve this. So Sora, right, talking about our three-month break, Sora has the ability to generate, I think, up to 60 seconds of video, realistic video.
Back up. For the listeners who have not heard of Sora, and what is it?
So, right, think like ChatGPT. You type in, generate a scene of a individual walking into McDonald's and ordering a cheeseburger. And there are image generators, right, that would generate an image of that. But nobody's been able to really, like, generate film or video.
And not anything in long form, for sure.
Not anything more than, like, you know, like, frame by frame. And now Sora's come to the table where it can generate realistic video of somebody doing something. And you tell it what it should be, right? And if you watch some of these, it is lifelike. There's a video, I'm just on the openai.com/Sora, S-O-R-A. Right, if you pull this up, there's a woman walking down a street in Japan or Tokyo. And if you were just looking this, like, I don't know, maybe there's an ad, right, on TV, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. But if you zoom in, you can see like one person kind of splits into two. Anyway, it's really difficult to tell the difference. There's some other videos.
Oh, they're amazing. I like this little close-up view of a glass sphere that has a Zen garden with it. There's a small dwarf in the sphere who's raking the Zen garden and creating patterns. Man, I feel like I could go down a rabbit hole with all these.
Well, you scroll over a couple more and there's an animated scene, close up of a short, fluffy monster kneeling beside melting red candle. And now I'm thinking about all the people that spend a ton of time, right? Pixar, Disney, and making animated films. Not that they maybe have to worry just yet, but it wasn't like 6 months ago that they could only do like 2 or 3, maybe 10, like a 10-second video, and now we're already up to 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And I think
which is about the average attention span of any human these days.
I don't know what you're talking about. But I think
I wasn't referring to you.
Oh, right. I was thinking like zillennials, you know.
Is that the new term?
I don't know. But or what do they say these days? I think Sam said something to the tune of this isn't being released anytime soon. And I think the context was the political environment, right, where you could make your candidate look like they were doing something very illegal or risque or whatever, right? Whatever kind of smear campaign you wanted to run, you could now generate it on Sora, and it could be all over TV. There's been talks from the or articles of people running robo campaigns in Trump or Biden's voice, right? And it's like, if you can't tell what's real anymore, we're getting into problematic areas. So I think I'm actually, we've got all this cool stuff happening, and I think it's going, and the overall benefit is going to be more than the potential negatives. But I can't help but be concerned in thinking about, like, well, what if somebody picked a photo of my kid, right? And now they generated a video of my kid.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, I'm already like, but there was, what was this? It was on Reddit. I saw this yesterday. It was a photo of a child in Africa that had put together a dog. This is a generated image, so not real, right? But took a bunch of plastic bottles and made a cute little dog out of it, like a, you know, like a sculpture. And that wasn't really the interesting part. I mean, we can do that now in like 30 seconds, but it was posted on Facebook, and the number of likes and comments that it had just kept going on and on and on and on. Like, there's so many people that took it for real, didn't question. There was no questions in the comments about it being fake. And if you maybe think about the people, the age group that's still on Facebook, you know, and they just take that as what it was, like, now you can misinform that entire platform on something that isn't true. And you could take that in a variety of different directions, right? So
I wonder if that's where more of the jobs are too. Maybe that's opening up a sector of jobs around, like,
ooh, it's like a whole
policy,
different
privacy, some sort of like advocacy.
Or detecting that detection. This video is fake.
Yeah. We did do an episode, maybe it was toward the end of last year, one of our kind of predictions, where we see content creation shift to content moderation. A lot of what you're describing is information that needs to be moderated, or should be,
right?
Should be some level of discernment. Just like the, you know, the search engines sharing that we're going to knock down AI generated content. Surely there's another similar set of tools or a whole market for people to fill seats to solve for that.
Yeah. Well, I do have to hand it out to OpenAI. They have literally, if you scroll down, there's an entire section about safety. So I don't want to spread misinformation of my own, right? But I think it's important that as we build, we being the proverbial everybody, we, right? And as we build these things out, thinking about those people on Facebook that just said, oh my gosh, this is wonderful, right? We gotta build for those people, not the people that, you know, understand what it is we're talking about right now.
Well, let's talk about that next time.
Next time.
I think that's a good way to end it.
Yeah. Are we out? Are we up on time?
I just think that we've covered a lot of ground, and there is so much to unpack in that, what you just said. And I think it's worth spending some more time on what are the implications and what should we be looking out for. So from a practical application, I'm, you know, scrolling through LinkedIn or Facebook, or I'm watching X program, like me as the everyday person that's listening to this podcast, or that's my friend or my grandparent, like, what should they be looking out for? And like, not in an entirely nefarious way, but to kind of critically analyze, because information is so readily available and it spreads so fast. We're in this information overload, right? It used to be, I heard some stat the other day, I'm totally going to butcher it, but we in one single day, in one, let's say 8-hour day, consume more information than people of the 17th century did in their lifetime. Like, there is some studies that have been done around just the vast amount of information that we have access to. And let's assume that you are on your, you know, in a feed and you're scrolling and you just, like, it's pretty incredible. And that was just a few hundred years ago. Like,
are you saying that you, like, you were talking about severance, you want to go back, you live like a 17th century lifestyle, but then at work you're like the 22nd century marketer?
Man, I'm not trying to like be uncomfortable. But yeah, like there is this level of, you know, there is a point where I think it can be, the technology can be somewhat detrimental. We're in this, I've heard it recently described, we were going to wrap up, but we're still going. I've heard it recently described as the comfort crisis, so much so that we have manufactured things that we used to be like hardwired to do. So like if we used to have to hunt for our food.
Oh yeah.
That inherently created an environment where we exercised. But now, because we don't have to hunt for food, we've manufactured these things called gyms to go exercise because our bodies like need it to function.
Yeah.
So we've actually started to manufacture the things that hundreds of years ago were more born out of necessity. So anyway, I'm just wondering where this is all going with additional like AI driving this stuff. It's happening so fast. Like what else are we going to manufacture for ourselves to like
interesting
take us back?
I like that thought about the gym. Entrepreneurs out there, if you're looking for like the next big thing, I think it's going to be writing business emails in a lab that you go to, right? And you exercise your fingers. Or like generating spreadsheets, you know, just for fun, because you're going to miss having to do that.
For fun. Goodness. Like
you get, not that you go to the gym for fun. Maybe
that's our next marketing campaign. I love that.
Generating spreadsheets for fun.
Did you get your 12-month membership for the Excel shop down the street? Really? Oh my gosh. I love it. Okay. Well, on that note.
Yeah. Well, actually though, last thing, if you heard anything today that you think you're an expert on and you want to be on the show and tell us how right or wrong we are, send us an email at thejunction@ventechnology.com, and we would be so thankful to have you on the show. Or if you just want to send us a note and tell us that, you know, hey, y'all should talk about this or you should talk about that, feel free to write out an email to us, right? And maybe we'll catch up.
Yeah, that'd be great. thejunction@ventechnology.com. In the meantime, keep it automated.